Hello, everybody. Welcome to Pro Photo Show, episode number 77 for May 25th, 2011. Gavin Syme here. I know it has been way too long. It's been over a month since the last show, and I apologize. I hate it when they go this long in between episodes. But as you know, I was on the road for a month. We got back from that a little over a week ago now, and had to get settled in and get things in order. And then late last week, the studio got broken into and some stuff got stolen, so I had to deal with that. And just kind of keeping on my toes between the wedding I had that weekend and all the things I had to juggle. But I am here running solo with one of those episodes that I like to put out there after I go on a photo tour, because I always go out and I come up with ideas and I try things. And I also come back from these long trips and I don't have a panel immediately lined up and stuff ready for our roundtable. So it's a perfect time for me to jump in and do one of those solo episodes. So let's do it.
Welcome to Pro Photo Show, the resource for professional and enthusiast photographers, a member of the Blueberry Network and the Tech Podcast Network. For show notes, tips, forums, and more, visit us online at profotoshow.net.
All right, if I may, I just want to do a really quick plug for my upcoming Lightroom online workshops. And I'm really stoked about these. It's a brand new way I've put together of presenting Lightroom. And I think it's going to be really educational and a lot of fun. A whole series of online, live, interactive Lightroom workshops I've got coming up. If you want to get serious about Lightroom on all different levels, I think you're going to like what you see here. Head over and check them out. Different topics, different skill levels, and I think this is going to be really cool. Head over to SeimEffects.com, SEIMEffects.com. Click on the workshops tab and check them out. Really stoked about these, and I think they're going to be cool. And I'll give a few more details on them later in the show. All right, let's get in here and just talk about some interesting things. And then I got a main topic for today to talk about some learning stuff when it comes to photography and techniques and things I've noticed in terms of learning and really driving ourselves to be better photographers. So we're going to come into that pretty soon. But just a few things. First of all, I mentioned the studio got robbed last week, and probably should fill you in just real quick on that if you don't follow me on my Facebook or Twitter. But my studio in Central Washington, somebody broke in. I don't know how exactly, still working on that, because they didn't actually force the door. And they came in and they got away with probably about $2,500 worth of stuff. So it could have been a lot worse. My studio is right on a main road and all the windows and everything are open. There's lights on at night because I'm showing prints in here. So it's kind of like if you walk in here at night, you're on display. And they'd come into the main room. They were actually trying to steal my 30-inch cinema display. You know, they had jerked all the cords out of it and were trying to pull it off. But the cinema display has this big herking cord, this DVI cord that comes out of the back, and it's integrated into it. So you have to pull it out. And because it was all like wound down through my desk and everything, they couldn't really get it out quickly. And apparently they spooked. So they took a small monitor I had in front that was out facing on my desk, but they couldn't get the monitor out in the time they wanted, I guess. So they ran out, they grabbed a Pelican case full of most of my lighting gear, all my mobile stuff, my speed lights and portable light stands and all that kind of stuff, and took off. So bummer deal. I don't have a whole lot of confidence that I'll get it back, but the sheriff has been out here and it's out there. If you see a Pelican case full of a bunch of lighting gear on Craigslist, let me know. But do have some insurance, so I'm working on that, some gear insurance. Hopefully that'll all go smoothly, but you know what? Could have been worse, and life goes on. Just got to keep moving forward, although I am thinking about putting a camera in the studio here and trying to just give myself a little bit of edge on the people trying to steal my gear. So let's move on and talk a little bit about this trip. So I had a month on the road. Great time as usual. Those of you that are on Facebook with me or on my Facebook pages or watching F164, which is my fine art and travel site, probably have an idea of what I've been up to. But we started down heading towards California, had a couple workshops in California, and had some fun teaching, did Lightroom and the Lights and Shadows HDR tone and detail workshop in the Bay Area. And then I moved on down towards the other end of California, down by Pismo Beach, and did the Lights and Shadows workshop down there as well. So got to meet some new people and see lots of new locations and, you know, ran into some hitches here and there. But all in all, got through all those. And then after the workshops, I got to have about two and a half weeks left on the road and just explore. So we actually headed gradually out of California up towards Arizona, took a visit to the Grand Canyon, up into Utah, went to Bryce Canyon, and just kind of roamed all over the place and worked our way back towards Washington. As usual, I could actually use more time because you can always spend more time at these beautiful places, but I'm really enjoying seeing these various locations throughout the United States. And because the price of gas is so high, I mean, I was paying like $4 a gallon for gas. So pulling my camper with my Expedition, looking at getting a diesel, but gosh, I probably spent like $2,000 plus on gas. So this summer, I think I'm going to stay a little closer to home. In Washington, we have beautiful landscapes. We have national parks, and I want to do lots of camping, but think I'm going to try and do ones a little closer to home, so I'm not driving thousands of miles this summer and get to see some cool places a little more locally until this, hopefully the gas prices comes down, but don't get me started on that. In any case, may have another Lights and Shadows workshop coming this fall, so stay tuned for that. And what we're going to talk about today is some of the things that I learned. I'm not going to give you just a travel log of everywhere I went, because if you're interested in that, you can check out my Facebook or F164.com. But every photographer, guys, should be going on road trips. And I don't care what you photograph, and I realize it's not easy to take a month off and just hit the road. I'm really blessed in that I have a business set up in a way that I can manage the business and you know, get some time off from the studio and manage the other projects from on the road. And don't get me wrong there, but you know, even if it's a week or whatever it is that you can get, I tell you, going on a road trip and going out and focusing on, you know, you're just going to take photos and to get creative, and you don't have deadlines, you don't have schedules to meet. You're out there to take photos, and maybe they're landscapes, maybe you're going into cities and doing urban stuff. It doesn't really matter. If you go out there, you start contemplating your work more, you start analyzing it more, and it changes the way you understand photography. That is how you really push yourself. And I'm almost finding that there's two sides to learning photography, because on the one side, when I go to a wedding, I do a low volume of weddings. And because of that, I really enjoy weddings, is one of the reasons. I think I would get burnt out if I had to do them all the time. But when I go to a wedding, I drive myself really, really hard to do something unique, to do something different from last time, to make it personal. And, you know, it's hard with a wedding sometimes to have it be anything but just another wedding. Well, I don't want my weddings to be that way. I want them to be something special for that couple. So I drive myself really hard. It's 100 miles an hour at a wedding. And, you know, I'm shooting and I'm working and I'm editing photos so I can have a slideshow at the reception and all this stuff I do. And the complete opposite of that is when I'm out on the road, I'm with, you know, my wife and my two kids, third one on the way, and got our car and our trailer, and we're driving around and we find a place in the woods to camp and we park there for a couple days, and I'm getting up at sunrise and going out and looking at these scenes and we're exploring, and my only deadline is that I need to be there by sunrise or sunset. The thing is, you don't have to be everywhere. You know, you go out, you scout, you find a spot, you say, this is good. I want to come back here and get this in perfect light. And it's teaching me so much. I mean, it's relaxing, but it's kind of these two opposite sides, because on the one side, I'm slow and methodical and thinking about things. And then on the other side of the wedding, I'm going super, super fast, but at the same time, trying to think about things 10 times as fast and try to be able to analyze things in my mind. And what it's doing is, by going out and doing things really slow and really stopping and slowing down and analyzing a process, then when I go into a situation where I have to use that process 10 times faster, my creativity is that much better, because even though I'm not going as slow, I have that edge. I have those ideas. There's things flowing into my mind and ideas that I've been experimenting with. And so it makes all my work better. So aside from the good images, I mean, I'm trying to build a fine art collection. I'm doing limited editions and things like that. But even if that's not your goal, just go out and take photos for you. Take photos for the sake of taking photos and for becoming a better photographer, because it's tough to stand out these days. And we really have to, you know, push ourselves, polish ourselves. It's taught me a lot about light, in that, and I just noticed this at the wedding Saturday. I was sitting out there thinking about how I'm going to do this scene, and I realized I was thinking about light in a different way. I realized I was looking at this saying, okay, I'm going to do these formals. Where's this light coming from? How's it coming? And, you know, what's it reflecting off of? These clouds are kind of bad, but where's my highlights coming from? What am I going to need for a flash, if any? And I know we talk about doing that all the time, and we talk about analyzing your light and looking at it, but a lot of times, once you get to that, to a wedding or something where you're being demanded to keep moving and to get this done and people are depending on you, it tends to slip by. I mean, you may be doing it subconsciously to a point, but you're not analyzing it as much. And all of a sudden on Saturday, I realized how much I was analyzing this light, not entirely subconsciously, but almost, but partly subconsciously too. But there was actually a conscious thought of, okay, what if I do this? More so than there had been in the past. And it really struck me the difference between those two speeds of working and how it's affecting the way I learn. But however it affects you, go out this summer, go on a road trip, you know, take a week, take photos. We always make excuses for this stuff. And I was doing it too up till like last year when I finally said, you know what, I've been wanting to go on the road just because I have a wife and two kids doesn't mean I can't do that. It's perfect. You know, I went out, I bought a camper and I went on the road and it was amazing. Now, everybody doesn't have to take it to the same extreme that I do and have this idea of, oh, I want to spend months on the road every year. But all of us can take a few days and go on a road trip. And, you know, you can take that 3-day weekend, go out and take photos, and I think you'll be astounded how much you learn. Also, real quick, for those of you on the travel side, in terms of the areas I went, I'll give a shout out to f164.com/maps. Because what we do is, as I'm traveling, I mark all these things. There's actually a legend that's year-based. So there's one for last year and one for this year. There's different pins for areas I just thought were interesting. We mark the places we camp. So there's all these places that are marked, and they're marked differently if they're free, really cool wilderness kind of camping spots. So I'm going to continue to build this so that when other photographers are on road trips and things like that, they can go there and check it out and see if there's any place that they want to go, if there's a camp spot that works for them. And then I also made a public F164/Pro Photo Show map that you photographers out there can share your favorite locations and stuff like that as we get more and more into geotagging and things like that. I mark all these spots along the road for coming back to later and to keep track of everywhere I've been, and it's kind of cool. You feel this element of satisfaction every time you add a new pin to the map. So you can check that out on f164.com/maps. Okay, so rather than just a bunch of news and this new camera came out and that new camera came out, that can be fun. But as far as I've seen, there's nothing too earth-shattering going on in the camera news, and we can always come back to that on a roundtable. But I just want to talk a few things about things I've marked, things that are really interesting, and things I've come across lately that are really cool. So just kind of going through a few things. First of all, there's this video that's really cool called The Battle at F-Stop Ridge. And if you haven't seen it, just go YouTube it. I'll link it in the show notes. It's actually an ad for a camera store, but it's brilliantly done. And it's like on the battlefield, except they're using cameras instead of guns, and they're chunking away like machine guns, and you got these people crawling through the grass. And it's something you need to see, not have described to you. So go out and check out Battle at F-Stop Ridge, because it's a fun video that any photographer can appreciate. Couple of good reads I found lately too, and I posted these on the Twitter, but I want to start shouting out a few of these on the show and sticking them in the show notes of things that I find that seem really cool. And there was a couple links on using the zone system. One was by Michael Fry on outdoorphotographer.com, I believe it was, and I'll link that in the show notes. The other one was a really nerdy thesis by Gary Meek talking about using the zone system on digital and using essentially the concept of Ansel Adams' refined zone system, but applying that to the digital world. And some really interesting stuff that got me thinking in terms of exposure and analyzing exposure and metering and things like that. Because as we've talked about in the past, the better you nail it in camera, the better your final photo is going to be. And so those links are worth a peek. What else did I see lately that was interesting? There's this link that I'm going to put in the show notes section on the Library of Congress, and I'll put some links to this in there. But it's this photographer from the early 1900s who effectively, I'm still trying to wrap my head around this because it's wild. He basically did color photographs before there was color, or before there was color actively used in early 1900s. And he did it by using black and white, but then doing multiple frames with different color filters and somehow mixing that together to make color photographs from it. And I can't even pronounce his name. I'm going to try here. Prokudin Gorsky. That's better. And I'm just check this out because it's really interesting and it's kind of inspiring to really look and say, wow, here's somebody that was thinking outside the box. He was making color photographs when you couldn't do color photographs. And I plan on looking into this a little bit more, seeing exactly what went on here. But all I know is this caught my eye and it was really interesting and it's worth a look. So check that out. Another one that I think is really interesting that I actually posted to Pro Photo Show. So if you head over there, I'll link it in the show notes, but it is a recent post on the ProPhotoShow.net feed. And it's these videos interviewing Ansel Adams. And this isn't like a modern interview where somebody's talking about Ansel Adams. This is like looking back into the old days. I believe this was made in the late 50s. And it's got that vintage newsreel kind of feel, interesting and maybe even a little bit cheesy, but it's really interesting to watch because it's kind of an interview of Ansel Adams. It shows him in the field working. It's just a really cool thing to watch. There's a couple of videos that go together, and there's a post over there on Pro Photo Show. It was made, I believe, in 1957, and it's just really fascinating, and it's about 20 minutes long total with both of them, but I'll link that in the show notes as well. Okay, so a little bit of a blurb on 4x5, because as you may or may not have known, this last road trip I did was my first foray into 4x5, and I got a 4x5, got my hands on a 4x5 Linhof Technica field camera, and really cool old camera. I actually borrowed it from another photographer in Yakima, and I'm seriously considering purchasing it because I'm really thinking I love this 4x5 stuff. So here's the thing. I've not got the images back yet. Any day now, I should actually be getting my first batch of 4x5 negatives and also some chromes, some Velvia back from A&I Color Lab in California, and got some contact sheets coming with it too so I can sit and really look at them with the loop and analyze them. And then I'm going to take the best of them and have them scanned in really high resolution. So I'll have more details and examples in the future in terms of quality, and I'll be posting some images from this on f164.com once I have some back and scanned in and edited and all that good stuff. But I'm really stoked about this because there's, first of all, on the user experience side, there was something magical about working with this 4x5 film, and it comes back to kind of this concept of slowing down and the whole road trip idea or fine art idea of slowing down and really thinking through an image. And I talked about last time how I might spend 10 minutes setting up and composing a scene. Well, with the view camera, it's even longer. And first of all, you know, you're looking through the ground glass. For those of you that aren't familiar with this camera, I did post a photo of it on F164, so you can check it out there. But this thing, you know, you pull it out, it's got bellows, you can choose your lens and all that good stuff. But you're looking through this underneath the cloth on the ground glass, and you get under there with a loop so you can check your focus. So you're really getting in close and looking at this image, full size, 4x5, which is going to be the size of your negative, on the ground glass, upside down. And you start getting used to the upside down as you start working with it. And I can't say I'm fully used to it, but it is coming. You know, the more you look at it upside down, pretty soon your mind starts to interpret it and you start seeing this scene the way you want to see it. But being able to sit there and visualize and work with that and plan your scene, and also knowing that it's going to cost, you know, $5 or $6 a frame, not including any scanning, to make these images, I mean, you really slow down and you think about it. And a 4x5 sheet film holder, it has two on it. I'm not using any fancy autoloaders or anything yet. I was just using these two-frame sheet holders. So you put it in there, you get it all set up, and you put it in, and you pull the slide cover off the film, make your exposure, put it back on, and you pull the film holder out. It's so manual, so completely manual and organic, that it was just thrilling. And at the end of the day, there's the practical side. The reason I'm doing this is for resolution, because I really think this is going to give me a lot more resolution than I could have on digital. I know it's going to give me a lot more resolution than on digital, because what I'm finding, and you guys know I'm a fanatic about quality. I've been doing a lot of my own prints lately, experimenting with media types and working with all this stuff. And you know, honestly, even if I make a good file on a 5D Mark II, if I'm printing over 36 inches just on a nice surface, like a luster or a gloss or something like that, I really start to know it's digital. Doesn't mean it's a bad photo, but I start to see it. Now, I've talked before about making 70-inch prints and things like that, and a lot of that stuff I do is on canvas. You can get away with a little more on canvas because it has a texture. But you get to 36, 40 inches, you know, maybe I'd do a 50. But especially if it's on like a gloss media or something, I mean, you really do start to see those pixels. And I want more resolution for my fine artwork and my pictorials. Now, I'm not going to switch to 4x5 film for my weddings and for my senior portraits, but that's not to say I won't ever use it for that if it's appropriate. If I'm doing a family portrait and I know I'm going to make it huge, maybe I will use 4x5 film. But I'll have more to say about this process in the future, but I just have to say that it was really cool, and the experience was amazing. But something else that I noticed was the marketing of it was interesting. Because as I'm roaming around and, you know, I'm in these places and these national parks where they're just this melting pot. There's people from all over the world and they're all enjoying this amazing place. But everyone has a camera. I mean, it's almost like in these national parks, no one is a photographer because everybody is. I mean, you've got busloads of people with L glass and some of them even carry tripods, you know, and they're running around and they're taking these photos. And that doesn't mean those photos are good, but there is something to be said for the fact that I would go down there, and I was doing digital and 4x5, so I was hauling two tripods everywhere and this backpack full of gear, and it was kind of ridiculous, but I'd go in and I'd set up and I'd have my digital set up there, and then I'd have the 4x5 and the cloth and the ground glass, and it's almost like people just kind of stop and they stare in awe, and just there, it's almost like they're shocked to see somebody sitting here, you know, with the camera and the bellows and the cloth taking a photograph. And it really did bring up the opportunity quite a few times because they come and talk to you and I'm like, here's my card, check out what I do. And the marketing side of it really struck me because suddenly I wasn't just another guy with a camera. Suddenly I was a photographer. And it felt so good to be a photographer and not just another guy with a camera. And I know I'm speaking kind of metaphorically here because I am a photographer, but you go into a place, and even at weddings and stuff sometimes, I mean, people go to weddings and they talk about, you know, people didn't know who the photographer was and all that kind of stuff. Well, I go out of my way to try and subtly make sure people know that I'm the primary photographer at a wedding, but that's a topic for another day. The point is, when I had this 4x5 camera out, not only did I feel like, wow, this is amazing, this experience, I'm really sitting here, I'm really analyzing this, because I know when I click that shutter, my wallet just got a little bit emptier. So I slow down and I really think about it. But there's also the side of people really notice this. This is the real deal. I mean, this camera is a real camera. So I'm not, I love digital and I'm not giving up on digital, and digital is going to continue to grow. But I have to eat crow a little bit here, because a couple years ago, I would have said, and I probably did say, why would anybody use film? That's stupid. Well, now that I've gone more into making really high quality, really meticulous wall portraits and pictorials and things like that, there is a reason. Now, do I want to shoot 35mm film? No, I don't think so, because I think our digital resolution is up there, maybe even better now than 35mm film. But the larger format films, even a medium format or 6x7, and especially up into the large formats, the 4x5 and the 8x10, it's a lot of work, but you are truly going to be getting a lot more resolution. And just how much more and how much difference it will make in my wall print remains to be seen, because I'm waiting to get some stuff back, and it remains to be seen if I even did it right. So it's going to be interesting, and I just wanted to chat a little bit about the 4x5 and what it's taught me and what it's got me thinking in terms of things we can do and the relevance that film may have, because based on my calculations, and I think I said this before, it looks to me like I'm going to be able to get about 300 megapixels out of a 4x5. And it's going to be a while before digital is giving me 300 megapixels. Now, I've considered doing, you know, horizontal and vertical stitching, or using something like a gigapan where you define, you know, how wide of an area you want it to cover, and you can zoom in with a lens and it'll take a whole bunch of images and then you stitch them together and you make this huge, super high resolution image. So the concept of that intrigues me, but there's something lost. I'm interested in trying some horizontal and vertically stitched digitals and doing really large format high resolution, but honestly, most of the time when I see them, there's not a whole lot of thought that's been put into composition and really making a great piece. It's like, well, I got a really high resolution photo and that's it. But it's still, it's just like a 3 gigapixel snapshot is all it is. So yes, you can zoom in and see super detail. And admittedly, I know that you could take the time and that I could experiment with it and do some things with multi-directional stitching, getting really high-res images that would work and that would be good. But what concerns me about it is the fact that you, in some level, lose that visualization. You lose the ability to look through the viewfinder or on the ground glass and say, here's my composition, this is my scene, and really plan it out to that fine detail. There's an image I just posted on the blog a while back, and it was my longest exposure ever. It was 2 hours and 20 minutes long of these star trails. And I actually started setting it up before it was even dark. And I probably spent an hour and a half just analyzing the angle I was going to take it from and setting up the composition. Now, that one was done on digital. I'd like to try some of that on film as well. But the point is, you couldn't analyze it to that degree and get the same visualization by doing a multi-directional stitch. So just some thoughts on that. I'm not saying that's a bad way to approach it. I just wanted to point it out because it is something that I've considered and I don't have any answers on it yet. Okay, so before we go into our main topic for the day, I just want to talk a little bit about the Lightroom Power online workshops that I have coming up. They're actually starting next week. So Thursday, June 2nd is the first one, and that's Lightroom Essentials. And then the following 3 weeks on Thursday, there's going to be other workshops that are consecutive to the previous one. So what I'm doing with these is they're fairly short. They're about 90 minutes long. They're inexpensive, even more so on this first time around because I'm still coming up with the ideas and how I want to work with it. They're right around $25 for these workshops right now over at simeffects.com. And what these are going to be is these online Lightroom webinars, interactive. You're going to be able to log in. I'm going to be sharing everything on the screen, talking about the topics. Each one covers a specific group of topics. So wherever you are with Lightroom, if you're starting from the beginning, you can start with the first one, which is coming up next week. Or if you already have some Lightroom experience and you don't want to take the whole thing and go through all the basics, you can pick one of the more advanced ones. So what I have coming up is Lightroom Essentials on June 2nd. The next one in the series is Everyday Lightroom on June 9th. Following that is the Lightroom Pro on June 16th, and then the Lightroom Master on June 23rd. There's probably going to be some other ones that are even more advanced on the future and stuff that's related to business stuff in Lightroom. Those are going to be coming, but they're not scheduled yet. We're going to see how this first set of four goes. But I'm really excited about these. They're going to be simple, focused workshops where each one takes these four or five segments and says, here's what we're looking at today, and goes in interactively with everybody, and you can watch and you can ask questions and all that good stuff. You can call in. I think it's going to be an interesting little series of workshops. So I just wanted to throw in my little plug for it because it's coming really soon. And if you go to simeffects.com/LR webinar, you can check that out, or you can just go to simeffects.com and go to the workshops tab. So, okay, let's jump into our main topic for the day. And I want to talk a little bit about the concept photographer, about learning. So what I'm going to do here is kind of introduce a concept about concepts. And I know that sounds stupid, but this isn't some abstract meaning of life thing that I'm coming up with here. What I've started to notice in myself and seeing people at workshops and things like that is there's some different types of learners. It's almost like, I don't know if it's a level of experience or just the way somebody's wired, but it's almost like you have a concept photographer and an ABC photographer. The way I see it, the masters, the people with really good experience, are concept learners. They're concept photographers. And the newbies and the amateurs are ABC photographers. And I'm not trying to bash anybody or pick on anybody. I'm just trying to analyze this and think about how we can learn to absorb information and be better photographers. The difference in my mind is that a concept photographer or a concept learner takes ideas and they adapt them and they apply them. And this is something that people that are starting out in photography, I see them missing that a lot. And it's not something you can just hand somebody a note card and say, here, now you're a concept photographer, because that's just it. An ABC photographer follows ABCs. They're the one that goes to a workshop, and the whole workshop, they make a note of everything that speaker says. And they want that speaker to say A plus B equals art. And I've had people that, you know, they felt this way at workshops. They wanted me to say, if you do this and you do this, you're going to have a great photo. But that goes against the idea of making a unique piece of art or a great photograph. It's not an A plus B equals C thing. Now, there's guidelines you can follow, but I think why I'm bringing this up is to introduce the concept of not getting stuck in note card mode, where you say, write this down, this is how I'm going to do it. Because I see this at workshops all the time. When I go to workshops, I rarely take notes, unless it's like, look up this book or something like that. And some might say, well, you're just not listening, you're not paying attention. But I am paying attention. I go to a workshop and I don't want to be this photographer. The way they do it precisely is not what I want to do. I'm not trying to copy them exactly, although if they have a great idea, I'll be glad to use that idea. But I'm not sitting there making a Bible of everything they say, because now my focus is on writing this volume. If I write something down, it's like, use this menu or go to this website or something like that. But I don't need to write down everything they're saying, because I want to take home the concepts. Now, I'm a nerd and I love talking the tech, but the technique matters just as much. Your personal technique, your style, as it were. Now, there's a word that's abused all the time too, because to make ourselves sound unique, and I've been here, especially starting out, they say, well, this is my unique style. Often that word is used as an excuse. Oh, I blew out all my, why'd you blow out all your highlights? Well, that's my style. No, that's not your style. You did it wrong. We've come across this before. A style is really something that comes over time. You don't just say, oh, this is my style. I bump up my contrast by 50 on everything. That's my style. Theoretically, maybe that can be somebody's style, but honestly, it wasn't till I've been doing photography now for 14 years, which is a little scary since I'm 26 years old. But I started and got pretty serious about it when I was 12. Now, I wasn't making money with it then. But it's only the past couple years that I've really started to sense, finally, yes, I have a style. This is me. This is my look. And maybe I kind of had one before that, but now I'm starting to feel consistency. I'm starting to feel like, here's what I do. This is Gavin Syme. And I'm really focusing on building that brand. Now, that doesn't mean everybody has to take 14 years to do it, because I did learn a lot of things the hard way. But if we want to get there, if we want to develop a style, as it were, and a technique, and be really masters of the craft, and not just ABC thinkers, not ABC photographers, what we have to get past is being ABC learners. We have to be able to absorb concepts and apply those and make them work. I've seen photographers in my travels, and they think they're masters, and I look at their work, and again, not trying to bash anybody, but I'll look at their work and think, wow, you really are an ABC photographer. You've barely got the basics, and you've not got to the point where you can really think outside a snapshot. And I know that sounds kind of terrible and arrogant, but I see a lot of work. I look at a lot of work. I analyze other people's works, and I'm not trying to say that my work is the do-all, end-all, because I'm still learning. There's tons for me to learn, too. And 10 years from now, I'll probably look back and say, man, I was such an amateur. The thing is, to really make something spectacular, I think we have to go beyond ABCs, because there's millions of people out there with cameras taking ABCs. ABCs usually equal snapshots. Not always. I mean, you can say, follow this rule, get a good photo. But when you really start getting great photos is when you go beyond the ABCs and you start connecting the dots in your own way. But at the same time, keeping those ABCs, keeping those elements, keeping those rules as they were subconsciously in the back of your head, because you've worked them enough so that they're automatic and you know how to apply them in which situation. We say that rules are made to be broken if you have a good reason, and that's something I've said a lot. I think what I'm really saying is rules are concepts, ideas, and guidelines that work. And if you don't learn to think about concepts, you're not going to be able to effectively break those rules. Let me look at a couple concepts. Excuse me, a couple ideas that I thought of that differentiate. Somebody says to two people, take that pile of sand and use your hands and move it to the top of the hill. So the ABC thinker goes and he picks up the sand one handful at a time and he carries it to the top of the hill and he sets it down. He comes back and gets another one. It's completely literal. He wrote down on a note card, take sand with hands to top of hill. The concept thinker goes and he rents a backhoe and he moves the sand in two scoops, driving it up to the top of the hill and dumping it out. And then he goes and gets an espresso. They both use their hands. How about applying to photography and the rule of thirds? The rule of thirds is always pounded and pounded and pounded. And it is an ABC. It's one of those basics that's simple. And if you start to think in rule of thirds terms, you'll start doing better things with your photography. It's amazing sometimes, even as experienced photographers, how often we forget the rule of thirds. We let that go and you'll stop and you'll look at something later and think, wow, if I just followed the rule of thirds, that would have been a better photograph. So in the rule of thirds, you might say, well, you need to be in the right or the left third, and in the top and the bottom third. You need to be in one of those thirds all over the place. So that would be the ABC thinker. He would say, every photo I do has to be in the right third, the left third, and the top third or the bottom third. So I have this kind of composition. Well, that might make a really good composition, but the concept thinker might say, the rule of thirds is amazing, but I can adapt that. I'm in the right third. It looks good to be in the center third instead. I'm going to put it right in the center because there's lines, there's leading lines coming in from the side. So I'm going to put it right in the center, but on the other way, I'm going to put it in the top third. So I'm going to have symmetry to the scene. I'm going to have the leading lines, even though it's directly centered, it's in the top third, and I'm not going to put it in the right or the left third. Just throwing out ideas. Maybe I'm crazy here. Maybe you guys think I'm nuts, but I'm trying to convey some of what I try and convey at workshops, because Lights and Shadows, for example, it's a workshop about HDR. But on the deeper level, it's about understanding light, how we manage light. It's about managing detail, about making better photographs. And when I teach that workshop, my goal is to teach concepts. And what I've run into here and there is people seem to want me to lay it out in ABC mode. They want sometimes me to say, do this and this and this, and you'll have a great HDR photo. Well, that's not how a great HDR photo works, or great any photo for that matter. So I'm just trying to share kind of the way I think in terms of, if you think in concepts, if you look at a workshop you're going to, and it doesn't mean that you can never take notes. If you're a note person, take some notes. But don't think that because you make this huge thing of notes, and then you go home and that's like weighing on your mind. Oh, I got to try all these notes. I got to start applying all this stuff. But if you can get yourself into a mode, and I don't know when this happened for me, but at some point I started going to all these workshops in the past few years, and I started realizing these notes aren't helping me. I'm writing a bunch of notes and trying to be specific with things. And I started thinking in concepts. I started sitting down and listening to people talk and saying, yeah, that's good, that's good. And just trying to absorb it and not specifically saying, I got to remember to do this exactly that way. And it started changing things. It started changing the way I saw the scene and the image. Honestly, photographers are kind of becoming a joke in this day and age because people think they can pick up a camera and become one. People don't value a photographer very much. I mean, yeah, that's cool. You take photos just like my brother, just like my cousin, just like my uncle. I can't tell you how often I run into people and they'll come into my studio, and I'm cool. I like to talk shop, but they'll come into my studio and be like, yeah, my niece is a photographer and my son's a photographer. And it's like, I'm like, really? Is everybody a photographer? And I'm not knocking people for becoming photographers, but we talk about this over and over and over again. It's a skill. It takes time. And I think as photographers out there taking photos and in our learning, we have to learn, if we want to be masters, to be able to put things together in our own way, in a way that follows guidelines and rules and does things for a reason, but in a way that can adapt and interpret things to make a unique vision of the project we're doing, of the job we're doing. Basically, that to me is the concept photographer versus the ABC photographer. The concept photographer is or can be a master. He can look at a scene, and the scene may be boring by normal photography terms, and he'll stop and he'll say, wait, what if I look at it from down here? What if I forget the fact that there's an ugly sky up there and I take a photo of something completely different? Or what if I do it this way? Or what if I put artificial light here? Or what if I just wait 6 hours and wait for that light to be perfect? And it's not perfect. If it's not perfect, I'll come back the next day. The ABC thinker says A plus B equals C. I'm going to put this hill in the rule of thirds. I got a sky up here, even though the light's not very good. They don't even think about that. They take the photo, they go home, and then I'll do something in Photoshop. I'll do something in Lightroom. Believe me, I love Lightroom presets and Photoshop and tools and all that stuff. But if we don't make a good photograph, it's never going to be anything great. The more I look at this, the more I think that to make a photograph that's really something special, you have to be a concept photographer, unless you just trip over it. I mean, you see people that are amateurs, and they go out and they trip over this beautiful scene and they take a good photograph. But most of the time, you know, while people on Facebook might say, wow, you know, that's a beautiful landscape, that's a beautiful sunset, if you look at it, the photo's not actually made very well. There's not a lot of thought going into composition and stuff. I think sometimes I annoy people talking like this, and maybe some of you out there are annoyed right now because I'm so passionately fanatical about saying we have to make a good photograph. But there are millions of photographs being made, probably a day, probably millions of photographs being made an hour in this world, a quantity that's never been made before, and it's hard. I mean, on the business side, most photographers are not making it. It's really hard to make it as a photographer. it's something. I make more lately on photo tools for photographers than I do selling photographs. That's not something I would normally say, but it's true. I mean, I'm going to be totally honest about it. Sim effects and, you know, all these things I do and these tools I make, they've done really well for me. Now, probably maybe part of the reason I made more, you know, a year ago, it was kind of half and half. Well, I'm doing so good with this stuff that I focus on it more. You know, I market my weddings less because I don't have to be doing those weddings. I have these other projects. I'm teaching, I'm making photo tools. And, you know, doing that allows me to hop in a camper for a month and go on the road and do workshops and see new places while managing all this stuff from the road. So part of that is that I'm focusing on this side of the business so that I can be easier going on the photography side of the business. I mean, I keep talking about how I'm focusing towards the higher end, and I am. I mean, I'm charging more in the studio than ever in the past, and the jobs that I am doing are far higher in terms of revenue and profitability than they were in the past. But what I'm working on is getting more of those jobs, and I have my fingers in all these fires so I can afford to do that, and it's been a real blessing. But the reason I point this out is just to say that there's a lot of photographers out there. There's photographers that have been out there for 30 years that are really hurting. You know, then we get into the concept marketer and, you know, trying to think creatively in marketing and all that kind of stuff. And I don't want to turn this into another marketing episode. But my bottom line here is to say, if we want to be not just people who take nice photos, if we want to be really, really good photographers, we have to get beyond ABCs. You have to become, in my opinion, a concept photographer before you'll ever become a really great photographer. You have to become a concept learner to become a concept photographer. You have to be able to absorb information and ideas and apply those in a way that's not an exact duplicate of what you learned, but that's an absorption of the information. And if you don't agree, hey, that's cool. I mean, you can head over to profotoshow.net/forum and there will be a thread on this and we can talk about it and we can talk about concepts and we could talk about how you learn. And let me just sign this off with saying, I'm not saying you should never take notes. I find that lately I hardly take notes at workshops, and it doesn't mean I'm not learning, and it doesn't mean I'm not paying attention. If notes work for you, that's fine, but learn to make those notes concepts. There are rules in photography, or guidelines, if you want to call them, and they're extremely relevant, and you do need to know those, I think, before you can be a good concept photographer. But we also, at the same time, you need to understand the rules and then not take the rules to 100% seriously. Sometimes the thing you're working on may not exactly fit to the mold and you may need to bend it a little bit. So that's all for now. I guess I've about had it. I don't know. So I hope you got something. I know this isn't one of the super long episodes, and that's probably good because you probably don't want to hear me talking for that long. I think I've covered just about everything. I've covered things coming up. I hope you'll check out the Lightroom workshops, and I hope I can teach some concepts there as well. Even though in the Lightroom workshops, because some of them are dealing with basics, we're going to be kind of going step by step through stuff. But even with something like Lightroom, the further you get into it, the more it's going to be not specifically, this is how I do it. It's about knowing what you can do and then understanding those concepts and applying it to what you want to do. And it's taken me 14 years to start to understand that. And I'm probably just scratching the surface of understanding it. But the past couple of years, I have to say, lights have started to coming on, especially the past 12 months when I've started seeing this. And it seems like it really started changing for me when I hit the road and started taking photos for me. Not that I was never doing that before, but I started doing it in a lot more volume. And I'm trying to scream it out there and say, hey, look at this. Here's what I'm starting to think. And then I'm getting these ideas and either I'm completely insane or I'm onto something. I guess time will tell that, huh? So anyway, I'm going to call it good for today, everybody. Thank you for listening. Next time, you won't have to just listen to my droning voice, I don't think, because I should be able to get a really cool panel together and we'll have a round table, maybe talk about news and some topics and stuff. And if you have an idea for a topic or a question or feedback about the show, shoot me an email, profotoshow@gmail.com. If you think I'm crazy or if you think I'm spot on or whatever, I welcome your emails and also on the forums if you want to talk about this further. And of course, the show notes and the links and all this stuff I've mentioned will be on profotoshow.net. Of course, as always, you can find me at seimstudios.com. And there's links there to my Twitter, which is at Gavin Syme, and all my websites and projects and things like that. And We'll see how all this goes. All right, everybody, take care. Go out and make some great photos, and we will talk to you all soon. You thought you were rid of me, didn't you? You thought, no, wait, there's never an after show on Gavin's solo episodes. But there is this time. Yes, I did practice that laugh, because I actually realized I didn't give you a pick of the week in this episode, and I thought, what a perfect opportunity to make a stylized after show. Anyway, I have 6 picks of the week this week. And for forgetting them, that's kind of crazy because I have 6 of them, right? Now, one of them is brand new to the pick of the week. Just a small thing, inexpensive, but really cool. And then I have 5 that I actually had talked about previously on a Pro Photo Show article that I just want to shout out for you podcast listeners because it's really useful stuff. Maybe there's even more than 5. Gosh, I don't remember. But first one is a physical product. And it's Rothko's 550-pound Type 3 Paracord. Why is this cool? Because cord is something you can always use. Now, increasingly, as I go out in the wild, I may not have first aid kits and, you know, all kinds of stuff, compasses and stuff like that. But one of the things that's in there, along with the bear spray that I carry, is a bundle of this paracord. Because paracord is, it's really small stuff. I mean, it's this small bundle that I can toss in my pack. But you never know when you can use some good, strong cord. And this isn't a super big, heavy rope, but you could do a lot with this. Now, in the wild, it's kind of a safety thing for me. What if I need a rope for something? But in everyday shoots, this could be really useful because it's a lightweight cord. You can get a 50 or 100-foot bundle off of Amazon is where I bought it, and I'll link it in the show notes. But it's not expensive. And let's see, 100 feet is like $8 and 50 feet is like $5. And it looks like they're both eligible for Amazon Prime if you're an Amazon Prime member like I am. It's really well-rated stuff. It actually comes in colors if you want it, but I think I just got black or green or something like that. But get a bundle of this. I think you'll find it useful for all kinds of things. And as photographers, it's good to be prepared. And you never know when you can use cord and do something useful to make your photo come out better, tying something back. Maybe it's a branch. I mean, whatever it is. So that is my physical pick of the week. My next pick of the week, and what I'm going to do is rather than go through every individual one of these, because it would take too long, I'm going to link to this little article I posted just in passing while I was on the road. And it's my top travel apps and resources for road trips. And I'm going to update it in the future, but I'm just going to shout it out here for those of you that haven't made it to the site and you just want to look it up. One is Allstays Camp and RV. We use this thing on the road to find camping spots and places to stop and get supplies and all kinds of stuff. So it's not just for the camper. There's more than that to it. And this company, that makes this, Allstays, makes all kinds of good apps for if you're traveling. And maybe you're just traveling to a wedding, but I'll tell you what, having some tools and resources are great. And this is also available for Android too, as well as the iPhone. Geotag Photos Pro, I think I've mentioned that before, but I use that to tag my photos and record logs as I'm traveling right on my phone. Gasbook, now unfortunately this is only for the iPhone, but this thing is crazy. It pays for itself so fast. It's a location-based thing that is user updated, so it stays pretty well up to date because it has a lot of users, and it tells you the gas stations in the area and how cheap they are. At one point on our trip going through out of California and into Arizona, we were right on the border and they were absolutely crazy for gas. It was like $4.89. We went like 3 miles the other way because of this app and got it for like $3.67 or something like that. And I mean, we literally in one stop saved like $25 with this app. So it's Gasbook for Apple. And that's really cool too. Right here is another one. I believe it's just for Apple, but I'm going to link all of these in the show notes. And I had found alternates, if possible, for Android for ones that weren't available for iPhone. Right here is a super simple app. You turn it on, it tells you your longitude, latitude, and altitude. And from right there, you can view it on the map or email it. And this is super useful if you're traveling somewhere and you say, hey, let's mark this. Because you say, email my location, it dumps a Google Map link with the coordinates into mail, and you can send it right there, or if you have no signal, you can save it for later. And Those are some of my top ones. There's actually a couple more in this list, so I'll link this list to all these in the show notes rather than linking to every individual one so you can see the details. But there is, I guess that was four apps, so five total picks of the week for you. Count them, five picks of the week. And you got my evil laugh in there too, which I worked very hard on. So that's it for now. I think for real, this is the end of the episode. This is the after show, so the episode's already ended, but I'm still talking. Don't worry, I can ramble like this because I can cut this out later. As the editor, I am master of the words when I go to edit, so I can totally erase this and you won't know that I was sitting here rambling. I gotta go, because I gotta wrap this up, go home to my lovely wife and kids, and have dinner. Catch you all later, people.
hey, Gavin? You okay?
Yeah, Ace. Yeah, Ace. I'm just practicing this laugh. It's for the after show. Sorry, guys. Ace. I'm a ventriloquist. Ace is my buddy. He's a dodo bird.
Yes, I am. But yeah. Okay. Well, go ahead. I'll critique you.
Just what I needed. Okay. Here we go.
Now that's definitely not it.
I'm gonna get this. All right. Relax. I'm gonna get this. Whoa.
Well, whoa, where did that come from? That sounded like my mother-in-law.
All right, I almost there. That was just a little, came out a little high. Gotta get that deep, down, chesty, I don't know, whatever you call it.
I get it, keep going. Hey, that actually wasn't that bad.
I'm getting closer.
Okay, that just sounded like you were dying.
Well, this is actually a lot of work to do this. I'm not sure how villains do this so often because it's starting to hurt in my chest. They didn't teach me this in voice school. I'm gonna stand up.
Yeah, you do that. Maybe you'll get some more flow there, you know?
Yeah. Okay, here we go. One, two, three.
Hey, are you loosening your belt?
It's just I need to get a lot of air in.
Okay.
Just shut up, all right? I'm gonna get this. All right, good enough. Good enough. I'm calling this one.
I think you should.